Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Sammy Strutt, Head of Member Development for Bigger, and I'd like to welcome you to this Continue to Learn Extra webinar. I'm pleased to welcome Glenn Kirby, Technical Manager for Syngenta Turf and Landscape for the UK and Ireland. Today, Glenn will be discussing plant growth regulators and how to get the best results. He will be taking a look at Primo Max and some of the myths that have crept in over the years. Taking a fresh look at this plant growth regulator to look at how it could be best used to help greenkeepers in unusual times. Prior to joining Syngenta, Glenn managed turf for over 25 years, working and studying in both Europe and the USA. He has managed clubs at both ends of the spectrum with both large and small budgets and has experience of working at over 15 televised golf events. Glenn, I'll hand over to you. Take it away.
Perfect. Thanks, Sammy. Right. Hi, everybody. I'm sure you're all there waving and saying hello in the background. I'm going to spend a bit of time today talking about Primo Max particularly and how to use it in these times. Primo's been with us a while now. And this year, as you all know, has been a very different season. And we've had questions asked of us that we haven't had asked for a long time. So it's a good opportunity to go back in and kind of refresh our memories on what's going on. So I'm going to try and have a look at these subjects. And we've got about 35 minutes and I want to leave some time for questions at the end. So I've tried to limit it down really to what's really relevant at the moment and what is key. So we're going to have a bit of a brief overview of PGRs. So for those of you that aren't that familiar with them, just kind of brief explanation of what they're all about. I want to look at the risks. What are the risks involved with PGR programs? What can go wrong? And that, for me, just gives you that foundation block to work from when you make your decisions, when you know what can go wrong and what issues could come up. We're going to have a look at what to tank mix it with. There's lots of different thoughts and processes people use when they're tank mixing, so we're going to cover that. When to get a program started, what rate and when to reapply, those two are quite connected. And then we get quite a few questions about rebound effects, so we can have a little look at that as well. And then I want to have a quick brief look through the label, which is never the most exciting subject, but always worth doing because it's really important that we stay within the law. So what is it? What's a PGR? What is Primo Max? Well, Primo Max has the active ingredient Trinexpac ethyl in it. It has a concentration of 116 grams a hectare, and it's a micro-emulsion formulation. PGRs in themselves slow turf growth. It really is as simple as that. They're products that are used to slow down how quickly that grass is growing, and generally they'll do it in one of two ways. They'll do it by slowing cell division, or they'll do it by reducing the cell elongation, so you have the same amount of cells in there. And they do that by generally blocking the production of gibberellic acid. Primo Max is a gibberellic hormone limiter. And what Primo Max is doing is it's using that second process where it is shrinking the cells down. It's condensing everything that's going on in there into a smaller area. And you can see from this image up in the top right-hand corner there, you've got a microscopic image of a cell under Primo, where you can see that cell is very condensed, and then the untreated cell, which is much more elongated. So you still have the same amount of growth going on, still the same amount of energy, but those cells are much tighter now. And you can see in the image at the bottom what it can do. You can get this really, you can create these really tight, dense swards using it rather than this elongated. So you can reduce the amount of clippings you're creating, but pack a lot of it down into a smaller area by using it, your program. It's quite a complicated slide. We don't really need to pay too much attention to it, but what it's showing is the process that's going on at limiting these gibberellic acids. This is an important one to understand because when we talk about rebound effect later, to understand this process and what Primo Max is doing is quite important, but we don't need to know any details. What we really need to know is, what is it going to do in this situation? This is an American slide, hence the rates on here. But by adjusting the rate, you can reduce the amount of clippings you're getting off. So in the situation we're in at the moment, reducing the amount of clippings you're removing is really important in this reduced labour scenario. What we've done traditionally, though, is use Primo Max not so much as a growth regulator, but as a product to improve plant health and to improve surfaces. And we've done this because when you're condensing down those cells, you start increasing tillering, you start reducing vertical growth, and you start giving yourself a denser sward. So we kind of get into this habit of using the product for something it wasn't specifically designed for. It was designed to control vertical growth, and we've taken the byproduct of that, which is increased tillering, and we've created better surfaces with it, which is great news because we're developing better surfaces. You can see here where you've got some poa that has been either untreated without the product or under a Primo program. You see you much, much denser plant. You've got much tighter swards. You'll have a much denser, tighter putting surface under the Primo program than you would the untreated. And that's really how we've used Primo over the last few years. We've used it to enhance ball lie and playing surfaces. So there's some images here you can see from some photography we did and a trial we did to see if we could improve fairway lies by using it. And you can see we can get the golf ball sitting up on a much denser sward, much higher in the sward. And that's traditionally how we've used it. But actually, it was designed as a growth regulator, and we're now moving into this scenario where people are looking to it to help them reduce their labour, reduce their cutting. And you can see there's a really good image here of an untreated area on a fairway, and you can see the difference with the same amount of cuts. You've got clippings lying around in the untreated area. You've got a sward that's elongating that won't cut cleanly next time. And the same amount of labour used on both sides is coming up with two very different results. So we're trying to get back to some of these basics that I think maybe we've forgotten in this process of using it to improve playing surfaces. When we first launched Primo, we did an awful lot of work on looking at how it can reduce maintenance costs. Again, I don't think it's really been used that way. It's been used to improve sward quality rather than reducing labour costs. But actually, there's a really good opportunity now moving into this new environment, this new area where we're under increasing pressure to do more with less. So have a little fresh look at Primo and see how it works and see if we can claw back some of these labour costs, some of these reduced diesel costs, some of these reduced operator costs, and get the most out of Primo in this new era. So the kind of questions that I've been getting this year that I'm going to try and answer are, what are the risks involved? If I go at a high rate, what are the risks? If I go early, what are the risks? So we're going to have a little look at that. In this situation where we're trying to get reduced growth, what can we tank mix it with? When should we be starting our program? We've now moved in some decent weather, but when this first started for 3-4 weeks ago, I was getting asked and we were still getting frosts. What rate to apply and when to reapply again, and what impact will that have on the rebound effect? These are really important things to look at when we're thinking about our reduced labour situation and when we're going to apply this. And then we'll have a look at the legality. So what are the risks? Well, the risks of going early or over-applying are minimal. We've had Primo for best part of 20 years now. We've seen it in all sorts of situations. We've seen it in misapplied. We've tried it at really high rates in trials. We've seen people apply it with the decimal places in the wrong place and applying 10 times the rate. Never have we experienced any loss of turf. The worst case scenarios we've seen is some severely stunted growth and some yellowing of the leaf. Now, with that in mind, you've got to think about what are your trade-offs at the moment with what you're trying to achieve. Every site, every setup will be slightly different, and you'll all be trying to achieve different things. So what we'd normally do is we then start talking about tank mixing. If yellowing is the risk, then how do we negate that risk? What do we do to get around it? Well, normally we'd be looking to tank mix nitrogen and or iron in there to negate that yellowing. But as we move into this new period, and we're looking to get the very best value out of our growth regulators. I'm going to ask the question and get you thinking about this. Why are you applying nitrogen and or iron with those things? In a situation where the turf isn't going to be seen by the customer at the moment and you're looking to purely get the best out of it, why would you use iron in there? And why would you use nitrogen in there? There's no right or wrong answer to this. You know your site. You've probably used the product in the past. You've got to make a decision on it. But the best way to get the most regulation out of a product is to have less nitrogen in there. So the less nitrogen needed, or the less nitrogen used, the better. When I start talking to people about that, they generally follow up with a question, so should they use iron instead? There's no wrong to this. I personally would avoid it. Iron doesn't add massive value. It doesn't hinder the product. It doesn't add massive value to how it takes out. What it will do, it will cancel out some of that yellowing. Now, in a situation where the customer's not going to see the turf, why do it? That's my question. We're also in this situation now where we've gone from a very wet winter into quite a dry, desiccating spring. Applying iron through this period is an additional risk at a time where you've got less labour. Iron will desiccate the plant a little bit. It will move it into a drought situation slightly sooner when you potentially haven't got access to the same quality irrigation or the same amount of labour for hand watering or situations like that. Why do it? I personally would take the yellowing over the slight risk involved. But again, every site is different. Every expectation is different. Every customer is different. So you've got to think about that one yourself. Manganese is the next question I get asked about. As far as I'm aware, there's been very little actual trial work looking at manganese as a additive in the tank to negate that yellowing. I hear people do it, but I've seen very little data to actually support it. That brings me to an article that came out recently about from the USGA. They were looking at ways of getting the best out of Triexabat Kefal, and they recommended to lose the iron and calcium, which is something I've heard about before. It's one of these myths, it's one of these rumours that flies around. And we challenged that with them to see where they came up with that from. The response we got was it was a hypothetical analysis because iron is a cation and primo is a weak acid. So potentially it could reduce the amount of triexabat kefal taken up by the plant. In reality, in the field trials, we've never seen that. In America, it's actually recommended to apply with iron. So there's no downside to applying with iron that we can see. There are a few people out there that seem to have a bit of a bee in their bonnet about it, but it's based on a hypothetical analysis rather than actual data in studies. And that's one of the benefits of buying a product from someone like Syngenta, is this is all backed up by data and supported. So as far as using iron, generally, absolutely fine. I would go with that. That would be my option in this situation when we have a dry, desiccating spring, and fairly limited labour available. It's a question I would ask, what's the value in it? Manganese. There's some strong theory in there. I haven't seen enough data on that to say yes or no as to whether it works or not. When to start? So when I was kind of started putting some of these articles and bits and pieces together, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, we were in a very cold period. People were asking, could they get started early because they didn't know where this was going to go. We would normally recommend waiting until you hit 8 to 10 degrees soil temperature for more than 5 consecutive days. Which is probably where we've moved to in the last couple of weeks, most areas around the country, which is your kind of traditional application time. Whereas going early, two, three weeks ago, when we had a bit of a frost, what was the downside to that? And again, from all our experience of using Primo, the risk is fairly low. Going early may cause a bit of additional yellowing or a bit of additional stunted growth, but there's no real downside to it other than those two things. And in this situation, where labour may be tight, going early isn't a harmful thing. And have a little look later at the kind of longevity mechanism behind Primo and understanding that. And there's no real downside either from going early when it's cold in longevity. You will get additional longevity at cooler temperatures. Excuse me. The next question we ask is, so what rate should I go at? When should I be looking to reapply? What will I get with a rebound effect if I go at higher rates? And they're generally three separate questions, but they do all kind of combine into one. So bear with me through this next section, because these three things all connect together. And I've hopefully tried to make it as simple as possible to explain what is a fairly complex story. So rates to go with, I think this is when it's worth having a look back at the label. You have to remember when Primo was put together, as a growth regulator, really strong recommendations on the label about how to use it. One of the misconceptions in the industry over the years has been this label and how to read it. It states in the top left-hand corner there that it's recommended application rates. They are a recommended maximum application rate. So according to the label, the maximum application rate you can go on greens is 0.4 litres a hectare. And assuming you have ryegrass in the rest of your sward, if you're below 18 mil, you can go up to 2.4 litres a hectare, or up to 3.2 if you're above 18 mil. Now, the amount of suppression you'll get out of those rates is then very dependent on the height of cut and the species of turf you're applying it to. Also your nitrogen input and the growing conditions. There's some really strong rates there for suppression. And the bottom line is, the higher the rate you go, the more suppression you're going to get. So when you're trying to decide a rate, you're aware of the risks. The higher the rate, the more potential there is for yellowing. But also, the higher the rate you go, the more the potential there is there to suppress the amount of growth you get. And we've got a study here that shows quite nicely that by increasing that rate from 4 litres a hectare up to 1.6, you keep reducing the amount of clippings, and you can have some significant reductions by upping that rate. So we know that by changing the rate, we can increase or lower the amount of suppression we get. So what I've got here is a chart. I've used this hypothetical chart quite a way through, or in quite a lot of areas of this presentation, so it's worth understanding it. The bottom axis shows the number of days. The side axis shows a percentage. So the black line in the middle is 100%. So assume that is your control plot. And you can see the red line is a hypothetical high rate of Primo, and you're getting a large amount of suppression out of that. Whereas the blue line is a medium amount application of Primo, and you can see you're getting the kind of middle range of suppression, and your green line is low. Now, what you don't see is an increase or change in rate. You don't see additional longevity. Now, that's not strictly true. This is one of the myths that's very difficult to debunk. There is additional longevity of Primo at higher rates, but it is related to a number of things. The longevity you get out of Primo is heavily related on to temperature. It's heavily related to the height of cuts on the grass, it's related to the turf species, it's related to the nitrogen levels in there, and the climatic conditions you're under. So there's a lot of variables that relate to how much longevity you get out of it. But you do get small amounts of additional longevity by upping the rate, and we'll have a little look at that in a minute. So the longevity is very driven by temperature. So what we've got here is three hypothetical situations. You've got cool temperature, you've got warm temperature, and then you've got hot temperature, and we're back to the line. So if you look at the cool temperature period, you would get much longer longevity, much longer period of suppression than you would if the temperatures lifted. And if they lifted even higher, then that period shrinks down again. Now, when you start moving out of your suppression period, you can start moving into this rebound effect. Now, again, the rebound effect is heavily reliant on a number of factors, like how long has it been under growth regulation? What time of the season is it? What grass species is it? What's the nutrition, background nutrition going on? But what you can learn from this slide is the warmer it is, the shorter the period of suppression, and the sooner you're going to move into this kind of running out of product and this possible rebound effect on the back end of it. You don't change this significantly by increasing the rate. And the reason for that is the product is available in the plant, and it is available when its longevity is based and driven by temperature. It has a half-life of around 100 growth degree days with a base temperature of zero, which converts to the UK factor, because we tend to use a base factor, a base temperature of six, around 75. So to put that into practice, I've got five rates here on the left-hand side of the screen. I've got 0.2 litres a hectare at the bottom, 0.4 litres a hectare, 1 litre, 2 litres and 3.2 litres. And you can see there, in the first part of its life, you have a significantly more product in the plant than you do. And that's heavily related to the rate. But you have this half-life. So by around that 75-day growth degree day mark, you see that amount of product in the plant half. And then if we look at the second 75 growth degree days, it halves again. So by the back end of that, the rates have really shrunk down and got closer to each other. And the lower rate has maintained a larger amount of it as a percentage than the higher rate. So as you move forward through this timescale, you'll see that the amount of product in the plant reduces and gets closer all the way through. So by going at high rates, you get a much more significant amount of suppression through the period of control, but the longevity, whilst there is some additional longevity, it's not as significant. I think you have to go like four times the rate to get around 25% additional longevity. And actually, if we're managing our programs properly, then we should never get into that period that it runs out anyway. So the rate and timings is very, very dependent. It's really difficult to pull out a specific figure other than the top end rate you can go according to the label. Your rate and timings will be very dependent on your nitrogen rates. The grass species will have an influence on it. The cutting height will have an influence on it. What's obvious and what's clear is doubling the rate will not double the longevity. If you've got, for argument's sake, 2 litres available to you, as far as longevity goes, you're much better off going at 2 1-litre applications than 1 2-litre application. So the rebound effect. So come back to this complicated slide that I don't fully understand, but when we're looking at how PrimaMax works and it blocks the gibberellic acid synthesis, it does it at this late stage here. Effectively puts a dam in place and breaks that down. So all of the gibberellic acid is being produced behind the scenes, behind the plant, behind that blocker. And the best way it was explained to me that really made sense, it was like we're putting a dam in place. Got an image here of the Hoover Dam, and that is blocking everything up and it's blocking everything behind. Now, in order to avoid that rebound effect or to release that water, you have two choices. You either let that water through gradually, which is about reducing your program, or getting yourself through to a low growth period and then coming out of it, or that dam busts and it all escapes. And if it all escapes and that dam busts, then we move into this rebound effect that you can see where it goes past this 100% line. So what this is showing is the first half of its life, it's reducing that gibberellic acid production, and the second half of its life, the dam breaks and it's all being released and you get additional growth. This is a really useful slide to start thinking about how do we build a Primo program to get the very best out of it. If you look at this slide, you can see that I think it's probably about day three here, we've reached that bottom half of the curve, and then we've got this sweet spot that we're looking to apply our next application in. So we're looking to avoid on down curve, and we're looking to get in there before we hit the rebound effect. Now, that's in the hot conditions. So if we use that same slide and we look at that warm conditions, which is much more relevant to the UK, then we've got this much longer window in which to apply it. So the longer it's lasting, the longer it's going to be in the plant, the wider that sweet spot is for us to apply products to flatten out this curve and avoid this rebound effect. And the cooler it is, it gets even longer as well. Now, the reason this is so relevant to the UK is because we do have a wide range of climates going on. Now, growth degree day models are a brilliant way of working with Primo because it's the breakdown of the product is very related to temperature. A simple temperature equation in a growth degree day model works really well to explain it. So what I've done is I've pulled some Growth Degree Day models out for around the country. And I'm going to start with Paul. Now, Paul, I always go back to on Growth Degree Day models because it is, for me, and all the stuff I've looked into, the best place in the country for growth. I think that's probably why the houses are so expensive on sandbanks. So you can see here the wide range every day through 2019. You can see how many Growth Degrees Days they had through there through the whole season. Now, if we look at St Andrews, you can see that curve drops slightly and everything just pairs back. And if we look at Bingley, which is the STRI research station, you can see it drops even further. Now, when I put these together, I was expecting the middle of the country to fall in the middle. But actually, when you plot all three on one diagram, you can see that Bingley is the coldest place out of those three. Paul is significantly higher. Now, when you look at that graph, you start to see the differences in growth degree days and temperature around the country. And that's really important for putting your plan together for using Primo, because it has a big impact on how the product works. And when you accumulate all that data over the period of a year, you can see by the end of the year what a wide-ranging difference you've got. I think we're at 1,400 at Bingley compared to 2,200 in Poole. So there's a significant difference between areas of the country. So there's also going to be a significant difference in the way to use this product correctly. Now, what we're looking to achieve when we apply on a Growth Degree Day-based application is staggering our windows, depending on the temperature, to ensure that just as that product is coming out of its, or heading towards its rebound impact, we top it up with another application and we get this really good flat line all the way through where we get consistent growth. That works if you use a Growth Degree Day model and base your, change your application windows depending on the temperature. What I tend to see more often for those people that aren't gathering that data is a bit of a mess where they think they're doing really well and they're applying it on kind of a 28-day window or a monthly window or a 14-day window. And if that product isn't moving towards the end of its life scale, what you start doing, and you can see this at the beginning, you start layering on top. You start building your rates. You know, you might be at, say, 0.4 litres a hectare, but because that's not falling away and reducing, and you put another application in on top of it, you start increasing your rates at the beginning of the year because they're layering on each other. And then as you move through the season, the periods stay the same, your application window stay the same, because that's when you apply or that's when it ties in with golf or that's what works for you. And as you move through the season and temperatures grow warmer, then you've got this much higher risk of having gaps in there where you're going to get the rebound effect, you get less control, you're not layering that product up, so you're not getting the levels of suppression that you would have got during the cooler temperatures. And then as you move into the autumn, it shrinks back down again and you start layering the product up. So some of the feedback you get sometimes is it doesn't work as well through the summer months. Well, it's very related to temperature, so you need to pull those in. And it's not about applying higher rates of it, it's about pulling those windows in tighter together. And this slide was the same slide as I put up with the three different areas, Bingley, St Andrews and Poole. What I've tried to highlight here is assuming you applied on the 1st of May, you can see the difference in 150 growth degree days. In Poole, you were around the 26th of May, you were that 150 growth degree day window was running out, whereas you were into the kind of first week of June for St Andrews and Bingley. And that's once you would assume you are into the full growing season. So depending on where you are in the country, has a big impact. So I've pulled all of that data again into this graph, and you can see at Bingley, if you were trying to apply Primo on 150 growth degree day window, you would start the season, if you started on the 1st of April, you would get around 52 days control out of the first application. Going into 26 days on the second one, 26 days on the third one, 18 days on the fourth, 16 days on the fifth, 13 on the sixth, 14 on the seventh, and so on and so forth until you get through to around mid-November where it really starts stretching out again. That's around 11 applications, assuming you were trying to keep control on 150 growth degree days to keep things consistent all the way through. Whereas if you move down to somewhere like Poole, You would only get 38 growth degree days out at the beginning of the season, and quite quickly you move into 12, 13 days through the middle of the summer. Now, that really makes sense to me, because when I talk to a lot of people, and my experience as a course manager was I would get into these 14-day windows, these two-week windows, because that's what I felt worked for me. Actually, it's a really solid application window as a kind of generic one through those summer months. But what you have to be aware is, if you're sticking to those two-week application windows, either end of the scale, as the temperatures lift and cool, you're going to begin layering the product on top of each other. So accidentally, you're increasing your rates through the very period that your temperatures are also slowing things down. So I pulled that data out again just to look at that. If you were just sticking to a 14-day window and you applied on the 1st of April in 2019 in pool, you would have only reached this point, this blue arrow in the bottom left, rather than getting to your sweet spot, which is where we're looking to achieve it. Whereas if you'd applied on the 18th of June, you would have been right back in the middle of that with a two-week window. 20th of July, you're getting pretty close to that back end of it. So you can see quite quickly through that, in one season, how using a 14-day window is probably not the best practice. But however, you go up to Bingley, and if you'd apply on the 1st of April last year, then you would have been reapplying massively before you moved into that sweet spot. So it shows the difference in the climates. You would have had to wait until the 15th of July until that 14-day window was about right. So for me, now I've kind of had a look at all of this data and started thinking about it, I've asking myself a number of questions. I'm starting to question whether growth degree day as a model should be a single figure like it is at the moment, or whether it should be a range. I think we give ourselves a much better opportunity of hitting these windows if we kind of looked at it from the bottom of that curve to pre-rebound as a range of dates that we're trying to get into, rather than trying to hit one specific day. And I also think there's a really useful tool in here of layering products on top of each other. And that's a really useful tool at the moment. The reason it's so useful at the moment is because we're not looking for something that's normal. We're not looking for this consistent score, this consistent amount of growth all the time. What we're trying to achieve at the moment is really increasing the rates as high as we can get away with to reduce the amount of cutting, so that when we do move back into a normal period of golf, that we can have limited the amount of input going into it now, but we can bounce back out with some really good surfaces as soon as we start getting some customers back. So layering is a question. It's come to me looking at this data, but it also kind of came to me when we looked at a trial 2018 at the STRI looking at shade. We did a lot of work with Primo under lights. It was on ryegrass and it was at 25 mil, to keep that into perspective. But one of the things we did is we took a Primo program in that situation under some real shade through the whole winter on a 7-day window. Now, we reduced the rates as we went, but that kind of flies in the face a little bit of going with growth degree days, because growth degree days would really widen your window through that period, whereas what we did, we applied every 7 days. What we were adopting there, without realizing, was this strategy of layering up all the time, building on what we had. So actually, we were really packing the plant with Primo Max by the end of it. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just a case of when you're adopting one application method, either kind of layering or using a growth degree day model, you're aware of what you're doing. If that plant isn't losing it and shedding that product because the temperature is right, and what you are doing is you are layering that and really increasing the amount of growth suppression you're going to get. It's absolutely fine if you're aware you're doing it and you're doing it on purpose. So we're looking into this a bit more. We're doing some work at STRI at the moment. We're doing a live trial. This is the first time we've done this. We have some Primo Max applications in place with a number of cutting regimes in place. So we are cutting some of the turf once a week, some 3 times a week, and some 5 times a week under some different application rates. So we're going 0.4 litres a hectare across all of them. And in one of the trial plots, we are going to be going every 7 days. In one of the trial plots, we're going to be going every 50 growth degree days. And then one of the trial plots, we're going to be going every 100 growth degree days. Now, in all of those situations, we are going to be layering up to a certain extent. With the growth degree day models, we'll at least be getting some consistent layering up, Whereas what I expect we'll get from the seven groups, just the seven straight days, is we will be getting this inconsistent layering, and we'll see where we get to. The purpose of this trial is to try and help people through this awkward situation, give them some live updates every week about how it's looking, and maybe that will just give you some help and some guidance on how to get this through this situation best you can. Now, I can't hear you all, but I imagine you're all saying, Glenn, growth degree days are a pain in the arse. Who wants to be logging all of that in Excel and making it happen? I was one of those course managers. I was one of those people that really bought into the concept of growth degree days, but never really made the time to write it down and committed to it. So Dan and myself have been working really hard on developing this for the Greencast website. It'll be out in the next 2 or 3 weeks, hopefully. What you have is now a tool in the website where you can log your location, and it will tell you your growth degree days for all of this year. You can go into the date range and pick any date out from the beginning of last year all the way through to this year to look at your growth degree day models, how that's worked for you, and what it's looking like on your site. The really useful thing for me is the opportunity to set your own thresholds in there now. So to help people really improve their timings on these products, you can set your own thresholds, whether that be 50 growth degree days, 100 growth degree days, 150, whatever it may be for you, plugging that into the program here, and you will get a notification when you reach 80% of that growth degree day window, which will hopefully help you get the most out of your products. So I'm going to move on to the legalities of it, which shouldn't take too long. I've already touched on this one. I think one of the things that people have misinterpreted on the label is the recommended application rate box. These are maximum rates that are allowed. So 0.4 litres a hectare on greens, and then under 18 mil, 2.4, over 18 mil, 3.2, assuming you've got ryegrass in there. It's a really strong label. It's probably the best label we've got left on the market. You can apply up to 3.2 litres a hectare as your maximum rate on rye above 18 mil. Maximum total dose of 16 litres a year. Minimum interval of 7 days, hence why we're going at that 7 day interval at STRI in this trial, because that is the tightest we're allowed to pull it to according to the label. No more than 28 applications per year on managed and amenity turf. As far as labels go, it, like I said, it's probably the strongest one we've got left. So to kind of summarise what I've gone through, what are the risks with using growth regulators at the moment? Well, the risks are low, assuming you're prepared to accept a bit of discolouring, stunted growth. We've probably moved through that period now with the cool weather behind us. So if you're purely looking for suppression, then the risks are low. What to tank mix with it? For me personally, we're now in a period where it's about minimal tank mixing. It's all about growth suppression at the moment. To maximise your growth suppression, you want to limit what else goes in that tank. When you're looking at Primo as a product to improve plant health rather than purely suppression, then that's when you want to start looking at other things to tank mix. But for me at the moment, I would reduce what goes in there. When to start? Well, there's minimal risk to starting early to the temperature. So the cooler the temperature is, the less growth you're going to get, but the more longevity you'll get out of it. So your risks are low. There's not a lot to lose by going early, as long as you're prepared to accept a little bit of yellowing. When to reapply is a complex story. Personally, it's all about picking the right rate, the right level of suppression for you. That will change at the moment because you're really trying to reduce the amount of clippings you get. And it's all about those windows. Let me just unplug that, it's going nuts. And the legalities, I think the thing that gets missed a lot is 0.4 litres a hectare on greens is your maximum. Everything else, anything with ryegrass in it, you can go up to 2.4 or 3.2, depending on your height of cut. That's me covered, really. I've tried to keep it down to a sensible period of time so none of you fall asleep. If you've got any questions, please fire away. I've got loads of other stuff on this. Primo is probably one of the most researched subjects or products that we've got in the UK. If people want me to go through anything else or have requests for any of the other data we've got, I'm more than happy to put that together in another presentation for you. But hopefully, Sammy, that covers most of it.
Yep, I'm just... give me one second. So we've got a question here. If applying at half rate, 200 mil per hectare, what growth degree days should you aim for?
So a good window to start your calculator. I think the key thing with growth degree day windows is, what are you trying to achieve? So assuming you are just trying to get that 0.2 litres a hectare control, which you'll get some sensible suppression, not loads of suppression out of 0.2 litres a hectare, 150 growth degree days at a base temperature of 6 will take you through to that tail end. You won't get massive amount of suppression, but you'll get slightly improved turf health with that. So if you were looking to get more suppression out of that, then you would start layering the product. So you would possibly bring that in tighter to maybe somewhere around, and this is what we're looking at the STRI at the moment, this kind of layering effect. But I would encourage you to, if the more suppression you want, the tighter you bring that growth degree day window into. So if all you're looking to do is keep it smooth, and it's 150 growth degree days, if you're looking to get more suppression out of it, then layer them in tighter. I'd look at probably somewhere around 75.
Okay, another question come in. How do you feel about mixing some fulvic to help the uptake into the plant? And is it possible to have a lower application rate with this approach?
I hear a lot of people talk about improved uptake when it comes to tank mixing products. We generally don't see it. If there's a way of improving uptake and getting more out of it, then we would do the work on that. Generally, or I haven't seen the data to support tank mixing things like fulvics or nitrogen to get more out of the product. It's not a bad thing to do. They are probably compatible. We don't have a fulvic acid at the moment, so we've got no compatibility data. But Primo has proven to be very successful with compatibility all across the range. There's no downside to it, I would suspect, but there's probably no upside to it either.
Okay, another couple of questions coming in. How long should we leave on the leaf before irrigation?
In reality, as long as you can. So we've done some tank mixing work with Liber in the past, and it's not something we jump about and stat and shout about because it wasn't perfect, but what we've tried to do is leave it for 4 hours before we water it in. Generally, it's rain fast pretty quickly, but I think if you give yourself 4 hours and you'll give yourself plenty of time for it to be fully absorbed into the plant. So I would advise four hours as a minimum.
Okay. What about watering agents with PGR in a tank mix?
Okay, so that kind of ties back to that last bit. So yeah, okay. We've done a lot of work with Calibra and Primo in tank mixes. We're back to conscious compromises, which I talk a lot about with my application kind of line and communications. You're trying to achieve two different things with a wetter and a systemic product. The systemic product you want very much on the leaf, with Primo, particularly the lower part of the leaf, because a lot of it's taken up by the crown. Whereas with wetters, you want it into the soil. So no matter what you do there, you are going to make a compromise with one of them. Now, as long as you're prepared for that compromise and the trade-off is a reduced amount of time applying it, then that is fine. They're compatible. They will mix in the same tank. They won't cause any problems. I did have a quick look through our Calibra studies. The challenge we've got trying to drive data on those kind of things is when you put the two of them in a trial together, if you take the Primo out, then you get additional growth because of the wetter. If you do it the other way, then the no wetter will reduce the amount of growth. So it's really difficult to put a trial together to prove that it's a positive or negative. What we do know is you are very definitely trying to target two different areas, so it will be a compromise. There's very little downside to doing it other than a compromise on one or other of the products, depending on how you apply it.
Okay. Questions coming in now. If you don't add iron or N, would the yellowing give longer results due to a change of photosynthesis?
No, I think if you're not putting the nitrogen in, then you're not getting the additional growth out of the nitrogen and the growing out. So from that point of view, you would see a longer period of yellowing, but you wouldn't see the yellowing without the N. In reality, most of the rates people are going at on greens, they're going to see very little of this kind of bronzing yellow effect anyway. It's a really difficult one to answer, and you would get a slightly different result at every venue with every different climate, with every different grass species and every different management practice. The bottom line is if you apply without nitrogen or iron, you do have a higher risk of yellowing. No downside to plant health, but a higher risk of yellowing. The question is that something that is tolerable for you at your venue to get the very best out of the growth regulation factor?
Okay, and what about Primo with fungicides?
Yeah, another one that I've spoken to a lot of people about. There is a belief, there is a theory, a hypothesis maybe, that by reducing the growth you have going on with the turf, you would sustain a systemic fungicide in that plant for longer. Kind of buy into the concept, but it's not supported by any of the trial work we've seen. The data just isn't out there to support it. There is no scientific reason to say that it would stay in the plant longer because of the Primo, because they're broken down in very different ways. The fungicide will be broken down by UV light and microbial activity, whereas the Primo will break down in a different way. So there's no data to support it. I know some people that think they're getting great success with it. I know others that think that the Primo through that period of the year is too much of a trade-off to make. I'd love to do more work on it.
Okay, one final question for you, Glenn, unless any more come in, is with chemicals regularly going, how long are we likely to have Primo for?
Primo is something that is heavily supported by Syngenta. It's been with us a long time. It is probably the safest in our portfolio. You can't say with 100% guarantee that anything is going to be with us, and we get very little notice when we're going to lose products. So I'm confident it's going to be with us a long period of time. It's a great product, and Syngenta will do everything they can to supply any registration data that is needed to keep the product for the long term. So it has Syngenta's wholesale support, and I think when we look at it and our kind of risk and our strategy kind of thought process, that there's no risks to it short or medium term.
Okay. That's great. Well, I think that's the last of our questions. So I'd just like to say thanks to Glenn. Thank you for joining us. We hope you'll join us again soon. And for full details of future Continue to Learn Extra webinars, please visit the What's On page on the Bigger website. And with that, we will close. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.